WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
My guest is writer Ed McBain. He's just published his 40th mystery novel in his 87th Precinct series. It's called Tricks, and like the other books in the series, the lead character is not an individual cop, but the entire homicide squad. He's written other novels and screenplays. His most famous novel, The Blackboard Jungle, was made into a popular film. And he wrote the screenplay for Alfred Hitchcock's thriller The Birds, which he adapted from a Daphne du Maurier story. But those were written under his legal name, Evan Hunter. Ed McBain is a pen name he coined for the 87th Precinct novels. He's also written under the names Hunt Collins and Richard Marston. Actually, his birth name is Salvatore Lambino, a name he abandoned at the beginning of his career because he was told ethnic names didn't sell. Throughout his career, he's used different names for different genres, and he's written in several genres.
When I first began writing, I tried my hand at every sort of fiction that the pulps were publishing. I did westerns and adventure stories and science fiction and sports stories and some detective stories. And I also tried a few what have come to be known as police procedurals, where a policeman or a group of policemen were the heroes. And I decided back then that the only valid people to deal with a crime, especially a crime as serious as murder, were cops. If you come home and find your wife slaughtered in her bed, you don't call the little old lady next door and interrupt her knitting so she can come out and solve the crime as she does in many amateur detective novels. You may call your lawyer, but certainly not to solve the crime. You'll call him to inform you that your wife is dead in bed, and he'll say, "Did you do it?" And if you say no, he'll say, "Then call the police right away. I'll be right there."
You know, I figure one of the big differences between private detective novels and police procedurals is that the private detective has decided to work outside of the system and is usually a loner, whereas in the police novel, they're obviously having to work within the system.
Yeah, even more than that, the cops in the Private Eye novel are the heavies for the most part.
That's right.
Cops would leave the Private Eye alone, he'd have this thing solved in 5 minutes, but they're interrupting him and bothering him, and so he can't get his work done. But I suppose he is a loner. He's not outside the law. You know, Private Eyes are entirely legal, and they have licenses to practice their art. And
they're outside the bureaucracy.
Yeah, and they really are out of their... They're over their heads when it comes to solving murders, because they're not supposed to be solving murders. You know, they're supposed to be... doing skip tracing and adultery cases and insurance frauds and things like that.
There's a police officer in your new novel, Tricks, who really believes that he should retire from police work and start writing best-selling novels.
Oh, yeah.
He's sure he's going to be great. And he says, no one who hasn't been a cop could possibly write good cop novels. Is this a little in-joke here?
Yeah, that's a little in-joke. That's meant to be a comical scene. I think it is a funny scene that the laziest cop on the squad who never does any work is now talking about writing novels, which is hard work. I think a lot of former cops... With some exceptions, I won't mention any names because I don't like to do that, but some of them are very good and some of them are very bad, and the only thing they have going for them is that they were former cops or former investigators or what have you. It's not so much a matter of writing with these people, it's merely a matter of remembering and putting it down on paper, and that to me is not writing.
The first novel that you wrote that really got national attention was Blackboard Jungle, which was made into a movie of the same name. Now, you taught in a vocational school for a few months when you were young. Is Blackboard Jungle based at all on your experiences as a teacher in New York?
Oh, sure. On my experiences and the experience of other people with whom I had gone to college and who were now teaching in the system and who were bringing home to me atrocity stories about what they were experiencing around the city.
Did you feel that you weren't quite tough enough to handle some of your students?
Tough enough? I felt as if I were a man standing on a street corner throwing gold coins in the air and no one was picking them up. And I worked very hard preparing for class each day, and I would go in, and it was the most shattering experience I've ever had in my life to try to reach these kids and not be able to, because I knew I had something to give them, and I couldn't give it. I was either ill-prepared to do the job or lacking in some other way, but I was unable to reach the kids, and it was a frustrating experience. I would go home at the end of the day, I was almost on the edge of tears. So I guess maybe I wasn't tough enough.
You know, I'll tell you, I haven't read your novel, but I have seen the movie. And my favorite scene in the movie, and I wonder if you wrote this into the novel or not, is the scene where one of the teachers brings in his jazz record collection and wants to play them the Jazzy Blues, Bix Beiderbecke's record, and they shatter his whole record collection. Yeah. And he is just heartbroken.
Yeah,
I think it's such a great scene. Did you write that scene?
Oh, sure.
Did that happen to you or someone you knew?
No, it didn't happen to me. I forget. It happened to someone. It's all very hazy now because that was a long time ago, you know. But I think it happened to a friend of mine who brought his jazz collection to school. And I don't think they broke all the records. I think they broke one of them.
Yeah, in the movie,
in
the story.
All over the room.
Yeah, they break them all because the students think that kind of jazz is really square and that the only hip thing is rock and roll.
Yeah.
You know, you're a jazz pianist, right? Or you used to be?
Oh, boy. Is that an overstatement?
A hobbyist.
I used to play in a swing band when I was a kid, when I was in my teens, you know. I used to play piano. But really, I am the world's worst piano player. The world's worst. And I no longer even say I play piano. I never go near it. I just stay far away from it. But you see, that's why you become a novelist, because I wrote Streets of Gold, and the hero of Streets of Gold is a marvelous jazz pianist.
Living out your fantasy through other characters.
Exactly.
Do you ever think of your former vocational students reading your books and thinking, what a heck of a guy, what a tough guy this must be?
I doubt it.
Really?
If I couldn't get them to read then, and I was trying to sell some writers who were a lot better than I, like Shakespeare and that ilk. If I couldn't get them to read Shakespeare, I doubt if they'd be reading me.
Do you ever look back on your early career and say to yourself, it's really lucky I failed as a teacher? Because if you had succeeded as a teacher, you'd probably be a great teacher
and not
a writer.
The education courses I took were only a fallback so that I could earn money while I was writing. I would not be a teacher now if I had not been a writer. I would have been something else, but not a teacher.
This is a question based on your new novel, Tricks, that is something I think that a lot of people with answering machines are going to want to know the answer to. There's a woman who has an answering machine who's getting a lot of threatening phony phone calls, and one of the police officers says to her, look, you have to have a very straightforward message on your answering machine because anything cute is going to be...
A come-on.
It's going to be a come-on, to any stranger who calls up.
Yep.
Is that what the story is now?
Well, yeah, that's what policemen tell me. It sounds like if you get a caller, you know, an obscene caller or indeed anyone who's looking to do you harm, either verbal harm or physical harm, and he gets this cute message about hi, and he hears in the background sexy music going or a jazz piano or whatever, and hi, I'm out just now, but I don't want to miss your call, so please be sure to get back to me. You know, he's going to think he's got a real live one there, and he's going to call back, and he's going to catch us sooner or later, or worse, hi, this is Phyllis. You know, so now he knows her name. And he knows her phone number because she's listed in the phone book. And usually her address is listed, too. So he's got, even if she's listed as Jones P, he now knows her name is Phyllis. Phyllis Jones, and he knows where she lives. And it's dangerous. The simplest way to do it is to say, hi, you've reached 1234567. Please leave a message when you hear the beep.
And don't give your name.
And that's it. And anybody who knows your phone number knows it. The guy who got it from the book knows it, but he doesn't know whether there's you living there with a Siberian husky and a brute, or whether it's you living alone, or you living with 12 other people, or the tabernacle choir, or whatever. It's an anonymous message, and he won't bother you anymore.
Well, thanks for the tip. And
okay.
Ed McBain, thank you very much for talking with us.
And keep a hammer by your bed.
Oh, please. You're kidding, right?
No, I'm serious. That's the police say that's the best weapon for a woman to have.
Really?
Yeah, it's a hammer by the bed because she knows how to use it, and she won't use it unless the guy is very, very close to her, in which case she will. If she has a gun, she might go berserk, or a knife she won't know how to use, but a hammer she'll know how to use, and she'll know how to use it well.
Ed McBain's new 87th Precinct mystery is called Tricks.